Welcome back to TRP.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back to the Ross Lair Podcast. Now for a short story taken from my book, The Density of Distant Thoughts. Flashback is a coming-of-age story set within the backdrop of the first moon landing. Be aware, some words are not for little ears. Flashback by James W. Corcoran. Some say if you remember the 60s, you weren't there. Well, I was, and I can. How could I forget 1967? Scott McKenzie, Flower Power, the music of San Francisco tripping off the airwaves, and I, like the rest of my friends, captivated by this new awakening. Not that I lived anywhere near San Francisco. In fact, I had never been to the States. No, I was a spotty 15-year-old Irish kid living in the backwaters of Kilkenny. It might not have been Frisco, but to me, it was every bit as good. Radio had shrunk the planet, and we were as clued in to the latest trends as any kid in California. I admit they had sun and surfing, but we had the Barrow, a wonderful river that meandered its way through our small town, breathing life into an otherwise dreary, bleak mausoleum of empty, narrow streets. Forget the Silicon Valley and California. The Barrow was the place to be. That summer was special. Why? Well, for once the sun shone. We would take to the river and row upstream, listening to the transistor, wearing flowers in our hair in some of the most vile paisley shirts imaginable. We were Ireland's hippie apostles, spreading the universal message, love conquers all. I can sit back now and cringe, but back then we thought it really mattered. Not that any of the Neanderthal farmers ensconced upon the river's banks gave a tuppenny fuck. The following year, 1968, was a global bloodbath. Vietnam, Cambodia, Martin Luther King, Bobby Kennedy, the Paris riots. The list goes on. 1969 was only marginally better. I suppose, in hindsight, with the passing of time and the perspective of a different century, it's no wonder we all became a little cynical, withdrawn, self-centered. We had done so much growing up in those few short years, and now we felt we knew better. If man was heading for the moon, surely we could make it to the west of Ireland in a Ford Escort van. Robbie and I had girlfriends who wanted us to spend our holidays with them, so our first task was to make up an excuse. They were spending their holidays in Dunmore's with their parents, so we of course wanted to avoid the place like the plague. We eventually used the excuse, my granny in Galway was very sick and it would be nice to see her before she departed this life. Robbie, the oldest, was 19. He worked with his father as an apprentice electrician, had the use of a van and the bonus of a wage packet every week. To the rest of us, he was Onassis. Then there was Pope. Timmy was a small, bespectacled guy with a twisted spine. Polio, I suspect, but I never quite had the courage to ask. He worked with his father as a carpenter's assistant and was another wage earner. Then there was me, still in school and like Pope, not a bob in my pocket. Though we had planned our holiday months in advance, sadly, we lacked the cohesion of our NASA counterparts. But not to be outdone, we nicknamed the van Apollo the Third. As the big day approached, Timmy decided he wanted out, citing the discomfort of such a long trip, especially if he had to sit in the back. Even the double mattress we had acquired couldn't sway him. He was adamant, perhaps scared, pressurized, who knows. To be honest, it wasn't the opting out that hurt, but the loss of the 30 quid he had promised towards the petrol money. Now that he was gone, our trip was in jeopardy. The wanker, moaned Robbie. We'll have fuck all money to gargle. There's not much point in going now, lad, said Pope. That was Rich coming from a teetotaler with a pioneer pin. To my disgust, I detected a sense of relief in his voice. There was no denying it. Financially, we were well and truly fucked. I knew I could probably scrounge a tenner off my mother, only because she'd be worried sick about me not eating properly. Pope could get the same, but we knew it still wouldn't be enough. That evening, I felt dejected as I headed home. It's amazing what a good night's sleep can do. Balm of hurt minds, as Shakespeare used to call it. I have a plan, I said when we met up the following day. Yeah, what? Sheer genius, I assured him. Well, what the fuck is it? All we need is a piece of garden hose and a jerry can. Petrol will be my responsibility, I assured them, not really knowing if I could deliver. Brilliant, you supply the fuel, I supply the transport. And turning to Pope Robbie added, and you can supply the grub. Oh, what do you mean supply the grub? You know, nick the odd pound of sausages here and there. Nothing major. We'll distract the shopkeeper. It'll be a piece of piss. Ah, fuck off. If I were to get caught, I could end up in jail. Don't worry. We'll visit, said Robbie. I'm not stealing. Anyway, it's a sin. So it's wanking, but that hasn't stopped you. And what the fuck do you think siphoning is? I asked. That's different. How is it different? I asked. There'll be nobody around when you're siphoning. It can take me 5 minutes to siphon a car, I argued. It only takes you a second to stick something up your jumper. What if my mother were to find out? Ah, forget it. We'll nick our own food, I said. Hang on a minute, said Robbie. What the fuck is Pope contributing to this? He can do the cooking, I said, with all the skill of a peace negotiator in Vietnam. That's fine with me, said Pope. Robbie gave me a blank look. Cooking? What on? I shrugged my shoulders. I don't know. He can light the fires. That fucker couldn't boil an egg. It was a glorious July morning. As arranged, we left early that Sunday morning to coincide with Mass times. Back then, there was still a huge practicing Catholic community. Once we targeted a church, we simply drove into the car park and parked up beside a well-heeled Morris Oxford or Mercedes and sent Pope, an ex-altar boy, in to see how Mass was progressing. Then we simply siphoned at our leisure. The whole country was bathed in sunshine, and my first job of siphoning had been a runaway success. Having visited three different churches, we were now approaching the town of Cashel, and the petrol gauge was almost busting from the dashboard, and like our NASA counterparts, everything seemed to be going as smooth as clockwork. I caught my first glimpse of the Rock of Cashel that day. Wow, uttered Robbie. Pope scrambled from the innards of the van to take a look. Jesus, that's some piece of work. Yeah, I said. Looks great, lads, but it'll never get off the launch pad. That evening, we somehow ended up in Doolin. It wasn't planned. It just panned out that way. I had never heard of the place. Little wonder. It was just a crossroads in County Clare, with a pub close by. That night, O'Connor's was crammed with the Yanks, French and Germans, all enjoying the music. To our surprise, the place had more than its fair share of foreign fillies, as we began calling them. The music might not have been quite our scene, but I have to admit, the crack was mighty. Later that night, the music ceased, and a hush descended upon the pub as the punters gazed, transfixed, at the snowy image on the black and white television in the corner.
Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now.
I'll never forget watching Neil Armstrong step upon the moon's surface with those immortal words.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
One small step for man. Strangely, I felt more sadness than elation. There was a great big universe out there, so much to do and see, and the furthest I had gotten my whole life was County Clare. A drunk at the counter, oblivious to what was going on, filled his lungs and began a rendition of Galway Bay. By then, the spell was truly broken. The next few days saw us chase fillies through a drunken haze induced by the poutine we had discreetly bought at the local petrol station. As it became more and more apparent, we were never going to get into the saddle. We wilted. After 3 days of poutine and chips, we had enough. We simply couldn't hack it. Our heads hurt and our spirits sank. We decided to head back across the country to the relative familiarity of Dunmore East, where Emma, Michelle and Aoife were waiting. Emma was my girlfriend. Robbie was having a fling with Michelle. Aoife, Emma's sister, was a little beauty but a feisty bitch to boot. Pope had the hots for her, and we lied saying she fancied him. Now we were returning with our tails between our legs. We siphoned our way across the country, Robbie and I, suffering from delirium tremens, while Pope pontificated about the evils of drink. At that stage, I was beginning to think petrol tasted better than potchin.
I've got the month of May. Oh, I guess you say, what can make you, me feel this way? It's my girl.
We arrived in Dunmaurice the following afternoon. The girls were surprised and disgusted to see how dishevelled we looked. At first, they were standoffish, annoyed by our initial rejection, but soon our undoubted charms won them over and things were back to normal. We spent the afternoon on the beach swimming and messing about. Strangely, for the first time in the holidays, I felt I could truly relax. There was no more agendas, no more need to booze till we dropped, no need to pretend. We could be ourselves again. As I gazed at Emma lying on her towel beside me, I came to realise how much she and her impish grin really meant to me. Perhaps I hadn't seen the apple for the orchard. "I've got some hat," said Michelle, sitting up. I couldn't help but notice her stunning figure as she sat cross-legged before us in her skimpy yellow bikini. "How much?" asked Robbie. "I'm not a friggin' dealer." "No, how much hash do you have?" "Oh, enough for 8 joints, possibly more." "It's packy black. It'll blow the head off you," said Emma, not even bothering to open her eyes. "Where did you get it?" I asked. Michelle sifted some sand through her fingers and cast me a coy look. "Stole it from my brother's pocket while he was taking a bath. The poor fucker spent hours tearing his room apart. I even helped him search. He'd kill me if he ever found out." "Where is he now?" I asked. "The mother wanted to go shopping in Waterford, so the old man took him with him to play golf," said Michelle, accentuating the word golf as if it were some form of contagious disease. "Do you play, Aoife?" asked Pope, struggling to start any kind of conversation. Aoife squinted and gave him a disbelieving look. "Get real, will you?" Pope blushed. Emma lifted her head and raised her voice. "Don't be such a bitch, Aoife." I smirked at her. I could see the sibling rivalry was as keen as ever. For a moment, Emma blanked me. Finally, succumbing to a smile, she grabbed my hand. "Let's do something different tonight," said Michelle, all perked up. "I'm on for that," said Robbie. "I know," said Emma. "Let's drive out to Brownstown Head, roll a few joints and go skinny dipping." The girls giggled. I thought she was joking, but I soon realised she wasn't. I didn't know how to react. The idea was great, but I didn't like the fact that my girl would so readily strip off in front of my mates. "I'm really on for that," said Robbie, with an enormous grin on his face. Now I was feeling jealous. "Yeah, that settles it then," said Michelle, raising her eyebrows and grinning at the others. Later that evening, we picked up the girls outside the caravan park. They crowded into the back of the van. "Jesus," said Aoife, "even the mattress stinks of petrol." "Ah, that's another story," I said, sitting in beside her. "And whose idea was the mattress?" inquired Emma, giving me a sceptical look. "Robbie," I whispered. We rolled a joint and passed it around before we headed down to the deserted cove. The sun was sinking and the moon was on the rise. I gazed up, staring at it, trying to comprehend that man had actually set foot on that lump of cheese in the sky. The more I contemplated, the less I seemed to care. It didn't matter that there was a universe out there waiting to be explored. I had one life and could only be in one place at one time. Right then, there was nowhere I would rather have been. That's how strong I love you. Whoa. That's how strong. We swam and frolicked, soon forgetting our nakedness, as if our bodies weren't really ours, just nature's means of protecting the real us locked inside. Finally, as the skies darkened, a chill set in and we returned to the van. "What time is it?" asked Aoife. "Just 10, I said, glancing at my watch. "We have to be home by 11. "Stop worrying, we'll be there," snapped Emma. "You can drive," said Robbie, handing me the keys and hopping into the back and climbing into a sleeping bag with Michel. Emma, who was shivering, climbed into mine. "I bags the front," said Aoife, glad of the chance to distance herself from Pope. We had only gone about 3 miles or so when I noticed the petrol gauge was on empty. "Fuck, we're nearly out of petrol." "You're nearly out of petrol," Robbie reminded me. "Well, girls, I think we'll have to spend the night here," I joked.
"We've got to get home, otherwise we won't be let out again."
"You better siphon some more juice then," said Robbie. I was pissed off. He made it sound like an order.
"Where am I going to find petrol on these back roads?" I protested.
He wasn't listening. As I drove along, I noticed a car parked in a lay-by near a small cottage. I slowed down to take a look. Perfect, I thought. Not a sinner in sight. I drove 100 yards further down the road and stopped near a small bridge. "Pass me the jerry can and hose," I said, stepping out and opening the back door. Pope handed them to me. "I won't be long," I said.
"Be careful, don't get caught," said Emma, peeping over the top of my sleeping bag. "I'll have a big fat joint rolled by the time you get back," said Aoife.
"Great," I said, closing the door behind me and heading back up the road. When I got to the car, I had a quick look around. It was a Morris Minor and the coast seemed clear. As I unscrewed the chrome petrol cap, I realised the car was rocking. Then it ceased and I heard voices inside. "Fuck," I thought and froze. Some more words were muttered and the car began to rock again. Quietly I shoved the hose into the tank and began to suck hard. Petrol began to flow and I quickly placed the hose into the can. To my horror, the petrol thundered like a drum against the bottom. Quickly, I tilted it sideways. Again, the movement ceased. I breathed a sigh of relief when the rocking commenced once more. The can was practically full when the dreaded sound of air being sucked into the pipe filled my ears. This time, the movement in the car didn't stop. It got more frantic. To my horror, the door flew open and out stepped this giant of a guy with his trousers down around his ankles. When he saw me, he ran towards me, tripping in the process. I panicked, didn't even remove the hose and ran for my life, holding the can as tightly as I could, trying to stop the petrol spilling. My lungs ached and I sucked in air as I sprinted down the dark winding road. Just as I reached the van, I noticed the lights of an approaching car. I yanked the door and quickly shoved the can inside. Strange how life can change in milliseconds, how fate can deal a cruel hand and steal the pot. Forced to watch in slow motion the tragedy unfold, I saw Aoife lighting up the joint, and the kernel of the flame shoot from the can and out the door like the breath of a deadly dragon, its intensity burning my flesh, singeing my hair, lifting me backwards off my feet into the welcoming cool black night, where I seemed to float like an astronaut in the weightlessness of the moment. And, looking down, I could see a fireball and the roof of the van bulge outwards and tiny fragments of glass shoot from the windscreen like a myriad of newly forming stars. And, all the time, I could see their faces smiling back as they drifted ever further from me, shrinking into imperceptibility. I tried to scream, to call their names, but nothing came. Nothing but a veil of blinding darkness.
Keep on listening to TRP.